This is special coverage from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. At this hour, the findings of a congressional investigation of intelligence failures leading up to the attacks of September the 11th, 2001, are being made public on Capitol Hill. The report is the product of a joint House and Senate Intelligence Committee. It identifies missed opportunities to unravel the al-Qaeda plot before 9/11. It is highly critical of the Central Intelligence Agency and the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Among other things, it discloses that al-Qaeda operatives rehearsed the hijack plot in a dry run at a New York airport in 1998. In just a moment, we'll hear a news conference with the Republican and Democratic leaders on the two committees, and since this investigation started in the last Congress, they're the leaders from that time. On the Senate side, Democrat Bob Graham of Florida, who's now running for president, and Republican Richard Shelby of Alabama. From the House of Representatives, Republican Porter Goss of Florida, a one-time CIA analyst, and Nancy Pelosi of California. She is now the minority leader in the House of Representatives. Each is expected to make a statement, and they will be followed by questions. NPR's Mike Schuster joins us from NPR West. Mike, good afternoon.
Hi, Neil.
Some conclusions of this report, Mike, will be familiar. Lack of communication and cooperation between intelligence agencies.
Yes, very much so. In fact, as I understand it, the report focuses a great deal on the lack of coordination and the sharing of information between key intelligence agencies, the CIA, the FBI, and the National Security Agency, the NSA. People who have seen the report before it is being released at this hour have said that though that there's no smoking gun in this report. But the more we learn, Neil, about the details, just how much information was known by individual agencies and how much information was not shared with each other, I think will bring back again the issue of could these attacks have been prevented if there was much more coordination? And that will get involved in political wrangling for sure. But an initial look at some of the information and some of the testimony before this committee begins to make you wonder. There's so much there for so many years that had it been put together by some in the CIA or the FBI that were taking terrorism really seriously, you really begin to wonder whether they might not have found these guys before September 11th.
The joint committees held 9 public hearings as they investigated this matter and 11 closed-door sessions. Obviously, what we're going to be hearing today will be the declassified version of the report.
That's right. It's 900 pages. It's declassified, but there's still maybe 20% more that has been classified. And as we understand it, there's a big section on the involvement of foreign governments, mostly dedicated to Saudi Arabia, that has been redacted, left out of the declassified report. And that also is going to raise a lot of questions about what the investigators know and what the government knows about whether there was support within official Saudi Arabia for the hijackers.
And though the report is just being made public now, even beforehand, earlier this week, some have complained in Congress that, that more should be declassified and more of the report should be made public.
That's right. In fact, there is a story about a man named Al-Bayoumi, and there is some information in this report about whether he was an official in the Saudi Arabian government who knew two of the hijackers in San Diego and whether he funneled money and supported them in some ways. He is now back in Saudi Arabia. The Saudi Arabian ambassador to the United States this week has already denied that this man is an official Saudi Arabian connected to the government, but information in this report is going to keep that particular issue alive and raise further questions about further knowledge, if any, and further possible financial support for the hijackers from officials in Saudi Arabia.
We should remind you there is another separate inquiry underway, a bipartisan investigation that's being led by former New Jersey Governor Thomas Kane, a Republican, an investigation that's already been clouded by controversy even before it began. Henry Kissinger was originally nominated to head that investigation. He stepped aside after questions were raised about the propriety of that. It's been taken over by Thomas Kane, and its report is expected, what, Mike, in about a year?
I think so. They've only really begun their investigation and their hearings. It's not clear just how much support and cooperation they're going to get from the White House. The White House resisted to some degree cooperating in the congressional investigation. That gave rise to concerns within Congress and among the families of those who died in the September 11th attacks, that there should be some broader and deeper investigation, which led to the Cain Commission. But we still don't have any idea just how freely they will function and whether they'll be able to turn up additional new information that we might not get from the report being issued today.
Parts of this report have been leaked to various media outlets over the past week or so, and those published reports say it is a scathing indictment of the FBI and the CIA. A story in today's New York Times, though, quoted intelligence officials as being very dismissive, saying there's little new information in the report and that its conclusions are well known.
Those comments, Neil, strike me as largely self-serving. And as more details emerge from now the unembargoed version of this report, as I said earlier, it really makes you begin to wonder just what the FBI and the CIA were doing about this. There was the one issue that jumps out at me initially is the issue of the two hijackers that went to San Diego from Malaysia. Their names were Khalid Al-Midar and Nawaf Al-Hazmi, and they eventually ended up on the American Airlines jet that crashed into the Pentagon. And we know that there is a portion of that story that we've known already, that they were involved in a meeting in Malaysia with other Al-Qaeda operatives. The CIA knew about it but didn't put them on a watch list for the FBI to follow in the United States. And they, in fact, came to Los Angeles and then to San Diego 9 months before the hijacked attacks. But we learned more in this report now that the NSA had information about Khalid Al-Midar and Nawaf Al-Hazmi as early as 1999
and Mike,
in communications intercepts.
I think we're just about ready to get underway. Stepping to the lectern now in the Dirksen office building is Senator Robert Graham of Florida.
Today we are releasing the report of the Joint House-Senate Intelligence Committee's inquiry into the tragic events of September the 11th, 2001. This report fulfills the commitment that we made to the families of those who perished on that tragic day and to all Americans. The commitment was to conduct a thorough search for the truth about what our intelligence agencies knew or should have known about Al-Qaeda and its intentions prior to September the 11th. Our commitment continued to identify what lessons should have been learned from that thorough search, and finally to recommend administrative and congressional reforms to reduce the chances of such a tragedy occurring in the future. I need not remind you that this was an historic effort. For the first time in the history of the United States Congress, two standing committees joined to conduct a special inquiry. The joint effort had its own investigative staff led by the extremely capable Ms. Eleanor Hill. The staff reviewed nearly 1 million documents, conducted approximately 500 interviews. We held 22 hearings last year, 9 of them open to the public. The result is this document of nearly 900 pages, which includes both findings of fact and recommendations for reform. I am immensely proud of the commitment and the hard work that the members of the House and Senate Intelligence Committees gave to this review, especially our co-chairman, Representative Porter Goss. Our Vice Chairman, Senator Richard Shelby, and our then Vice Chairman, Chairwoman, and now the Democratic leader in the House of Representatives, Nancy Pelosi. Thank you. The report's findings are grouped into 24 subject areas. They all have a theme, a single bottom line. The attacks of September the 11th could have been prevented if the right combination of skill, cooperation, creativity, and some good luck had been brought to the task. For example, there is an abundance of important information in this report that suggests institutional resistance to making the counterterrorism efforts necessary to have it be a high priority for the nation prior to September 11. That resistance ranged from a lack of information sharing among key agencies to proposed budget cuts at the Department of Justice for FBI's counterterrorism programs. Simply put, those problems contributed to the government's inability to mount a successful initiative against al-Qaeda prior to September 11. Another example, a previously classified finding number 14, states that senior military officials were reluctant to use military assets to conduct offensive counterterrorism efforts in Afghanistan or to support or participate in CIA operations directed against al-Qaeda prior to September the 11th. At least in part, this reluctance was driven by the military's view that the intelligence community was unable to provide the actionable intelligence necessary to support military operations. The report confirms that between 1999 and 2001, U.S. naval ships and submarines armed with cruise missiles were positioned in the North Arabian Sea to attack Osama bin Laden. But we did not get spies close enough to him to tell us where he would be on any given day. If people want to place blame, there's plenty of blame to go around. And we have a recommendation, number 16, that calls on the Director of Central Intelligence to implement new accountability standards throughout the intelligence community. These standards would identify poor performance and affix responsibility. It would also recognize and reward excellence. The report makes clear that we should have known that potential terrorists were living among us. Indeed, two of them had numerous substantial contacts with an FBI informant in San Diego, California, for 6 months or more in the year 2000. And a resourceful FBI agent in Phoenix, Arizona, wanted to follow up on suspicions about foreign-born students who were honing their skills at American flight schools. But officials at the FBI headquarters shut them down. With this report, it is time to look ahead, to focus on our 19 recommendations, and to continue to the implementation of the necessary and important reforms of the intelligence community, and to enhance the federal government's partnership with state and local law enforcement and other first responders. If the recommendations in this report are heeded by the White House, the agencies, and the Congress, we should be able to make significant strides in improving our homeland security. In my view, it is regrettable that it has taken more than 7 months for the intelligence agencies to declassify the portions of the report that we are releasing today. I remain deeply disturbed by the amount of material that has been censored from this report. Our concerns about excessive secrecy, both during the joint inquiry and in the 7 months since, is reflected in recommendation number 15. This recommendation calls upon the President, executive agencies, and the Congress to review the current classification system and to make it more realistic, especially given the need of state and local first responders for real-time intelligence information. The 7 months review that our report has undergone has delayed our ability to begin implementing many of these reforms. It has cost us considerable momentum for legislative reform. I am committed to seeing that this report is not forgotten, overlooked, and filed on the shelf. With other members of the Joint Committee, I intend to file legislation to implement those recommendations that require action by Congress. We must act to honor the victims of September 11. I now recognize my friend and colleague, Congressman Porter Goss.
Congressman Goss is the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee.
This is indeed an important day. We've done an awful lot of work and spent a lot of time. And in some ways, the irony of that strikes me. I was thinking on the way over here, as much as we've done, and with as great a staff as we have had, led by Eleanor Hill, a staff that was originally pretty well made up by people picked by Brett Snyder from the community, and he did an excellent job of getting the staff up and running, and then Rick Cinquegrana made it work for a while till Eleanor came in. We've been very fortunate. We've gone through all those documents and all those places and talked to all those people, and you couldn't have four better members of the United States Congress to work with, or three other colleagues to work with, as far as I'm concerned. We've had a great go at this, and it is historic that we've done it in a bicameral and a bipartisan way. The irony is this. I can tell you right now that I don't know exactly how the plot was hatched on 9/11. I don't know the where, the when, and the why, and the who in every instance. I know a lot more than I did. But we still can't fill in a lot of the blanks. That's after 2 years of trying. And we will someday have the documents to exploit. We will have the people to interrogate. We will have ways to get more information to put the rest of the piece of this puzzle on the table. But right now, we don't have it. Obviously, both the Senate Intelligence Committee and the House Intelligence Committee are heavily engaged in these matters. The fact is, we are fully engaged in a war on terror. And a war on terror has many, many faces and many places, it seems to be. And in one of those places happens to be the continental United States, which is a big shock to all of us, I know. I think that when you take a look at this document, which is Bob properly held up as a big, heavy document, there's a lot of good material in here, there's some that isn't. You have to remember we are at war, and there are some actionable items still being pursued by the appropriate authorities. And you also have to understand that there are people watching this press conference who are going to read this book, who are going to analyze what information we've put out and what we haven't put out. And the last thing we want to do in any way is create an opportunity for a terrorist to take advantage of us because of something we put in our good intentions to have our public know what exactly happened, but nevertheless aiding and abetting a plan that would allow somebody to end run our capabilities and do damage to Americans at home or abroad. So that's been a difficult task for us to handle and for the administration to handle. I think we've got the balance about right now. If you open the report, you'll find there's a couple of blank pages. Those pages will not be blank forever. As soon as the actions that are necessary to deal with those issues are completed, those pages will be filled out. The record is not lost. It's in a classified section of our respective committees. It's a question of when is the proper time to release that information. So I think we're going to get there. This is an excellent snapshot. It's not a full anatomy. It doesn't tell you everything you want to know. But it tells you a lot, and it tells us some places we have to go, and it tells us some things we have to do differently. Now, the good news is we did not wait until today to start taking those steps, nor did the United States government or the executive branch. The legislative hearings have already started on what I call sufficiency. Why didn't we have all the information we needed to have? Where were the problems? What do we need to do different? How do we have to tailor our capabilities to fit the threat as it truly exists? All of those issues are ongoing. They are in hand. The agencies that are involved in this, our frontline agencies, have changed a great many things, still have more to do to be sure, and will require a lot of close oversight. I think that challenge is understood. I think the United States Congress is up to that.
I think,
and this is Senator Richard Shelby of Alabama.
We'll go through this report more than once, more than twice, and I recommend all of you do it. There's a lot of stuff in here, but there's a lot of information that's not in here that should be, in my judgment. But we did the best we could. We tried to declassify more of it. Bring it home to you because you would take it to the American people and to the world because we'll learn from this, I hope. The Joint Committee's task is finished. But the work to implement some of the recommendations, I hope, has only begun, because they're monumental feats to accomplish. The question is, will these recommendations be followed through? I hope so. But if it's like things in the past, not much will happen. But I believe now, since September the 11th, there's been such a wake-up call in America, and for the right reason, that the American people are going to demand changes. To sum up my judgment, my personal judgment is this, from what's in the report and what's not in the report that a lot of us have been privy to. I believe if all of the information had been put together before September the 11th in some type of central area, a fusion center, where it was analyzed and disseminated, coming from various parts of the world, first the alerts, a lot of signal traffic, and then, for example, the Phoenix memo, the San Diego reference that Senator Graham made, the Massawi case in Minnesota, the alert FBI agents. And you put that together, and if it were fused and acted upon, maybe things would have changed. We don't know that. This is hindsight. But we learn from the past, and if we don't learn, it'll certainly be repeated. I hope this will be a learning lesson for all of our agencies. But I think the basic tenet that we learned is a lack of coordination and sharing of information, different cultures in the community of intelligence. We've done our job, and now we've got to do more legislatively, and the people who run the intelligence community have got to do theirs.
And now to Nancy Pelosi, Congresswoman
from California.
It was a privilege
to join Chairman Goss, Chairman Graham at the time, Chairman Graham, and now Chairman Shelby, and the members of the House and Senate Intelligence Committees for the critical effort to improve our intelligence capabilities in the aftermath of the September 11th attacks. I was pleased to work on the joint inquiry with people of such patriotism and such commitment. I want to join my colleagues in thanking and recognizing the excellent work of Eleanor Hill, our staff director. She and Rick Cinquegrana gave tirelessly of themselves, not only on the investigation, but on the declassification process that turned out to be a significant challenge in its own right. I, too, want to join Mr. Goss in thanking Britt Snyder for the work he did in assembling the excellent staff. Always on our minds during the inquiry was our responsibility to the families of those who perished at 9/11. We are privileged to have some of the families here with us today. We have said over and over again during the inquiry that anything touching on the events of September 11th is hallowed ground to be treated with the utmost respect. This inquiry is not about assigning blame for 9/11. It is about better protecting the American people in the future. The inquiry was conducted with that uppermost in our minds. The report discharges our responsibilities as fully as we were able to do. Our work started with the recognition of a sobering fact. Al-Qaeda was better at planning the attacks and keeping their plans secret than the United States government was in uncovering them. The findings were released last December, and they in detail deficiencies the performance of our intelligence agencies. They failed to share information. They failed to ensure that techniques for collection and analysis were of the highest standard, and they failed to focus appropriately on the possibility that foreign-based terrorists would attack the United States. The joint inquiry made recommendations last December that were intended to address these fundamental problems, and I trust that the intelligence committees are monitoring the implementation of those recommendations. The unclassified report we are releasing today provides a better understanding of the basis for those judgments. As good as the joint inquiry and the reports are, they are not as complete as they could be. We repeatedly encountered obstacles in getting necessary information from the administration. For example, and I think this is very important, We were never able to get much of the material we requested from the National Security Council, specifically the records of the Counterterrorism Working Group and written exchanges between the National Security Council and the intelligence community on counterterrorism proposals. The nation was not well served by the administration's failure to provide this critical information to the committees. If the independent 9/11 Commission is not given access to these materials, its work will also be incomplete. Lack of access to the National Security Council information is not in our nation's interest. In addition, the administration's failure to cooperate fully with the joint inquiry showed an unwillingness to exhaust every effort to discover information that might assist in better protecting the American people. Even the joint inquiry's success in uncovering information in the files of the FBI dealing with the activities of the hijackers in the United States that had been previously known by senior bureau officials did not encourage the administration to be more responsive to requests for access to records and other documents. Equally disappointing was the process of declassifying the report. The joint inquiry took 9 months to do its work. It took nearly that long, or over 6 months, to negotiate an unclassified version of the report with the administration. This was about 6 months too long. Much more of the report could have been declassified without any impact on national security. This is especially true with respect to references to sources of foreign support for hijackers. And while I may have a difference in degree with Mr. Goss, I want to say without his leadership, we would not have had the declassification that we have. Thank you, Chairman Goss. Time and time again, this administration keeps information classified rather than making it public. Classification certainly must protect sources and methods, but it should not be used to protect reputations. This is at odds with the enormity of the tragedy we suffered on September 11th and the necessity of doing everything we can to make it less likely that we would experience events like those again. I am proud of the work of the joint inquiry. Better cooperation from the administration, however, would have enabled us to do a more thorough job for the American people. Thank you.
You're listening to live coverage of a news conference on the republication of a report on intelligence failures leading up to the attacks of September the 11th. We just heard from the four leaders of the congressional committees, and now going back to the lectern, we're expecting questions
now. Senator Shelby and I have been notified that there is a vote underway in the Senate. We are going to leave to make that vote and return as quickly as possible, and I'll turn the podium over to Congressman Goss and Congresswoman Pelosi. We'll be right back.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So as you heard, questions will be answered by the House representatives here.
Busy day on the Hill. Be very happy to take any questions you might have for either of us or anything about the report. I understand you had a walkthrough from Eleanor Hill, 11 pages of document. If you haven't looked at that, you should. It's help you with the report.
Do you agree that more of the report should have been released?
I think that the decisions that were made were all rational decisions, and I am satisfied that each decision to hold a fact back at this time was based on a reasonable presentation by the administration. I do think they will be released. I think that there is a timeliness about certain events that are going on. Certainly ongoing investigations would fall in that area. And I don't think there is abuse of the classification process in this final report. The question of need to overhaul the declassification process is undeniable. I mean, Ms. Pelosi is exactly right. We found just layer after layer after layer of obstacle. There was not people trying to throw things in our way. It's the culture of not releasing information in the community. And you've got people at the working level whose instructions are this is not to be released. Then you take it to the decision level and say, we think that the arguments are that this should be released. And we won a good number of those because of the very diligent persuasive powers of Ms. Hill, who basically was able to point out There were other ways to say things, to protect sources and methods, protect investigations, and protect foreign relationships, which are the problems. But we way over-classify in the government. We have for years, and that is one of the areas we clearly have to pay attention. And, in fact, we've already made some statements about following up on Senator Moynihan's good work to deal with the question of classification and declassification. Okay, I'll talk to the cameras. This gentleman has the question. I'm going to do my best to be polite to you and polite to them and get my face in the right place and my answer in the right place. Oh, absolutely. That's very well. There are a lot of areas that we did not go. There are a whole lot of areas. We didn't get into non-intelligence areas. There are whole kinds of regulatory agencies that are now in DHS and in other organizations where they definitely need to go. And in addition, as I said, our work is a snapshot up to the time we finished our investigation. There have been more things happening since then. There will be more things happening in the future. I think we are going to be hand-holding the developments for a long time on this. This is a huge piece of our history. It is critical that we get it as right as we can. And I'd be willing to bet that we're going to be doing this for a couple of decades.
I'd like to speak to the independent commission issue because I was one of the people who initiated such a commission even as this joint inquiry was getting started. It was absolutely essential for us to have an independent 9/11 commission where innovative thinking was brought to bear, where it was not within the institution, which was an important inquiry. That ours was significant and important and historic. This is now even more important because it will spring from the work of this commission, and I hope that in the classified version that the members of the commission will fully avail themselves of this information. And I call upon the administration to cooperate fully with the 9/11 commission. One of the reasons I used fairly stern words about the National Security Council today is because I had not seen that cooperation coming forth. And I think that's very, very important. It's important for us to know what the communication is within our own government and what information was there. Again, not to assign blame, but to figure out if we should revamp how we communicate with each other in order to protect the American people. And this, a lot of hopes are pinned on this 9/11 commission. It would never have come to be without the insistence of the families. They were the most effective and eloquent advocates for it. Their hopes are pinned on it as well, and the fact is it was still a struggle with the administration. So I think that the time is running out on the commission because of, you know, getting a late start for one reason or another, but I think the focus now has to be there, and as the distinguished chairman said, with a broader brief than what this commission had.
Senator Schumer says that the administration is coddling Saudi Arabia by keeping information about Saudi Arabia out of this report, protecting them. Is that true?
I know that there is some mention in the press on certain countries, and I know that there is some treatment of the question of foreign support. The document will have to speak for itself on that. The classified material that we have is, I think, as complete as it can be on that. And the measure of the judgment of anybody who asks a question like that has to have both the classified and the unclassified to understand the whole story. I believe this is an area that there will be more information coming in the future, but at the moment, I do not think the whole story is out there. Now, this gentleman over here.
I think that's a good question for Eleanor Hill because we've both had access to the classified and unclassified versions, and I think that probably is something safer to hear from her, as I know you were briefed by Ms. Hill earlier today.
Let me add one more thing in response to the previous question, if I could. I think it's helpful. The joint inquiry is turning over all its material, classified and unclassified. The commission will have that material. That's not going to be a problem. Additionally, I understand somebody made reference earlier to some national security. I think it was Ms. Pelosi. My understanding, I've been working with both Mr. Hamilton and Governor Kaine, and my understanding is that they have gotten some of that national security information they have sought. I don't know if they have it all. But I think that the narrow parameters that we focused on have been broadened very definitely, and certainly everything we have as a foundation is available, and certainly that will lead to more questions, as will the stuff that is coming through the door today, because every day something new happens in this.
Ms. Pelosi, can you respond to the question about Saudi Arabia? Chairman Goss responds, but I don't believe you do.
I associate myself with the remarks of Chairman Goss in that regard. We really can't speak to that issue. But I do want to say one thing that I think I thought maybe you might ask about, and that is this. After 9/11, the American people had the impression, and I think that perhaps the Bureau of the Intelligence Agencies may have given this impression, that these were loners, people acting alone in different parts of our community, not communicating with other people. And then when they got the signal, they all acted. What we have learned in our investigation of the joint inquiry, and one of its great values, is that was simply not the case. There are people in this country giving help, comfort, and financial support to the hijackers. And what's important for the future, and Senator Graham has said this over and over again, is where are those people? Are they still out there? We have to have the very best intelligence and the best communication among intelligence agencies. We have to have accountability internally in the intelligence agencies, and we have to have accountability up to higher authority in our government from those agencies as well. Because that impression at the start of these loners, and now they're gone, was in fact not the case. And it's still not the case.
I'd like to follow up and then ask a separate question on follow-up regarding Saudi Arabia. In recommendation 19,
this is a question about Saudi Arabia material alleged to have been left out of this declassified version of the report.
Does that actually mean you've identified more than one country?
Let me put it this way. As Ms. Pelosi has just said, we are very concerned about any support for terrorists, whether they're abroad or in the domestic continental United States, Alaska, or Hawaii. But our problem has been our intelligence capabilities have always been focused overseas on foreign intelligence. Turns out some of the problem has been right here in our homeland. And we have not had the capabilities we need because Americans don't spy on Americans. It's a free, democratic, open society. Thank the Lord. We're going to keep it that way. But we sometimes have to figure out then how to take care of people who are abusing our hospitality, taking advantage of us. Now, are those people being sponsored by other organizations that are terrorist organizations? The answer is yes. Senator Graham has been extremely diligent and extremely accurate on that subject. He has pointed out a number of times that there are other organizations and that there are specific activities unaccounted for, and they very well may be in the domestic United States, which is a very urgent threat for us. And one of the reasons why you have to stay in your seat on your airplane when you fly into Nashville, and one of the reasons why you have to throw a magnetometer to come into this building and walk around through all the barricades and so forth. Those kinds of defensive steps are being taken, as well as the offensive steps to get the information. I can't tell you whether the next terrorist act in the United States that is going to happen, which I pray we frustrate and disrupt before it happens, is going to be state-sponsored and run from afar, state-sponsored and run through an embassy, state-sponsored and run by a local front group, state-sponsored and run by a business, or an individual group of operations who just have an ideological desire to go out and make trouble today. I don't know that, but we have to protect against all of them. So when you ask me the question, have we taken into account foreign-sponsored terrorism, the answer is yes, we have. Is there more to be done on that? The answer is clearly a great deal more, particularly as foreign-sponsored terrorism can be manifest in our country. I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
Is it what? Is that why specifically in the recommendation 3 you mentioned Hezbollah and Hamas? Is this linked?
I think that would be a fair conclusion for you to draw.
In the report
activities in San Diego, and reached the conclusion that if that effort was put together more thoroughly, that was the best chance for unravel this investigation.
This was a question about San Diego and the identification of two of the turned out to be hijackers who were there, and if they had been properly identified and investigated, could have unraveled the plot.
Well, let me first say that on September 10th, the attitude on these things was a whole lot different than it was on September 12th. That's part of it. There is a cultural question there. The second issue I think is a very important one is we've already identified, and the report is replete with a number of deficiencies in the community, communications, coordination, stovepiping, all of those things we've talked about. They're all there in greatly enumerated. The problem that you have in asking me the question, or the problem I have in answering your question, is if we'd put this all together, could we have stopped it? Was this our best chance? The answer is right now, yeah, that would have been the best chance on what we know now. But I suspect that when we know more, that there will have been other places that we could have done a lot better. And it may very well be the answer to your question is, oh my gosh, there was a much simpler key to this. We didn't know that until just now.
That is Porter Goss, the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee. We also heard from Nancy Pelosi, then the ranking member on the Intelligence Committee, now the minority leader in the House of Representatives. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, as was mentioned, there is an 11-page document. We're going to tell you what's in that document and present some analysis. So stay with us. We'll be back in a couple of minutes with more. You're listening to special coverage from NPR News. You're listening to special coverage from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Over the past 40 minutes or so, we've been listening to a news conference live from the Dirksen Office Senate building on Capitol Hill. A report has been released on intelligence failures in the years and months leading up to the attacks of September the 11th, 2001. As was mentioned in the news conference, as you heard, a briefing was held for reporters by staff members of the Intelligence Joint Intelligence Committee before the news conference began, and an 11-page summary of the 900-page report has been released. So we're going to step back a moment to give you some of the details. The members of Congress speaking have been somewhat reluctant to address some of the details for fear that they would stumble into classified areas of information. Joining us now is NPR's David Wellna, who was at that briefing earlier on Capitol Hill and has just ducked out of the news conference. Hello, David.
Hi, Neil.
And also with us from NPR West in Los Angeles is NPR's Mike Schuster, who has covered many of these issues in the many months since 9/11. Mike, good to have you back.
Thanks, Neil.
David Wellna, as you've looked at this 11-page summary, what jumps out at you?
Well, I've actually looked at the 805-page document and gone through many, many pages of it since it was released early this morning. I guess the thing that really jumps out is that there was an immense amount of information that U.S. intelligence agencies had, including the FBI and the CIA, that had it been put together, those who carried out this inquiry contend that it might have been possible to avoid what happened on September 11, 2001. They go through many pieces of information that were not shared between agencies, some of the agents actually discarded, thinking that they were unimportant. And when you look back in hindsight, you see how many of those pieces might have been key for tipping off the government that this huge operation was almost underway. There's also a lot of very specific information about information that came to the attention of U.S. intelligence agencies that the committee went through. They went through the files, and they found things that we we have just not heard about before. I could give you an example. In December of 1998, there was a document, it's not traced to which U.S. intelligence agency, but one of them had this document saying that Osama bin Laden's supporters were planning some kind of an attack using an aircraft in the United States, and that also a couple of their operatives had done a dry run trying to evade airport security in New York and had been successful in doing so. Now, this was almost 5 years before the actual attack. I'm sorry, it was almost 3 years before the actual attacks took place.
David, I know you want to get back into that news conference and continue, but as you look at this, a lot of the questions immediately following the start of the news conference involved the material which is not in this report.
Yes, and it's suspected that much of that material has to do with one nation, Saudi Arabia. There are suggestions in other parts of the report that the Saudi government may have had very strong ties to somebody who seemed to be a handler for two of the hijackers in San Diego, somebody who appeared to be on the Saudi government's payroll and may have been a spy for the government. But when a discussion of this foreign involvement in backing hijackers comes up, it is followed by 28 pages of deleted material, and there have already been complaints on Capitol Hill saying this appears to be the Bush administration coddling the Saudi government. Porter Goss, the Republican chair of the House Intelligence Committee, said, have patience, that information will eventually come to light, but right now it's just too sensitive to be out there.
And Nancy Pelosi, as you also heard earlier, said that classification should be used to protect sources and methods and not to protect reputations. David, thank you so much. We'll let you go and get back into that news conference. We'll hear more of your reporting later today on NPR News. Thanks very much.
You're quite welcome, Neil.
Mike Schuster, one of the areas of that the report does go into. And by the way, if you'd like to read this report for yourself, we have a link to it on our webpage. That's at www.npr.org. So you can go to that webpage and get a link and read the report for yourself. And Mike, I know that you've been trying to scramble through it as quickly as you possibly can. But one of the things that, as I've been trying to read some of the summaries anyway, is the report's conclusion that, in a way, the United States CIA and the FBI and the White House simply did not take the threat of terrorism in this country seriously.
I think I would modify that statement, Neil, to say that certainly the White House, the Bush administration White House, once it came into office in 2001, and probably the FBI did not take the threat of Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda terrorism against the United States seriously. But there's plenty of information in this report to suggest that the CIA certainly took it very, very seriously. And in 2001, tried to alert the Bush White House that this was a serious possibility, that there would be attacks in the United States and that they would involve the possibility of hijacked airliners crashing into buildings, possibly Washington and New York. There are some extraordinary findings in this report that trace the CIA's concern about Osama bin Laden and the possibility of hijackings and airline crashes going back to 1998, and there is a specific finding, a form of conclusion that the report comes to that says, despite, and I'm reading now, despite intelligence information on the immediacy of the threat level in the spring and summer of 2001, the assumption prevailed in the U.S. government that attacks of the magnitude of September 11th could not happen here. As a result, there was insufficient effort to alert the American public to the reality and gravity of the threat.
And there is follows that, you know, there are quotations from various members of the Clinton administration in particular saying that they did try to do this. But nevertheless, the report concludes that one of the greatest weapons in countering terrorism attacks is public awareness. And the public was not motivated and marshaled to do this. And they give us examples, certainly the plane that crashed in Pennsylvania after it became known that other planes had crashed into the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. The passengers on that plane alerted to the possibility that their hijacker was going to crash and cost a number of lives, attempted to seize control of that airplane and save lives. And, of course, then the shoe bomber incident when that was a terrorist incident that was prevented by alert passengers.
Certainly that would indicate that Americans in general, the public in general, would have been far more vigilant before September 11th if the government had told the American public that there was a serious threat. And this is something that has puzzled me deeply, Neil, ever since September 11th. In the aftermath of September 11th, there was a famous briefing in the White House where the National Security Advisor, Condoleezza Rice, came out. And among the statements that she made, she said nobody here in the White House at senior levels could ever imagine that terrorists would hijack airliners and crash them into buildings in New York and Washington. But what this report documents is that there were plenty of warnings, plenty of senior officials, plenty of intelligence going back 3 years before that, at least, that this was a real threat, and that there were the level of the threat was known to people in the White House, this so-called counterterrorism strategy group that Nancy Pelosi referred to in her remarks at the press conference, that were frantic about the threat during that summer before the attack.
Joining us now from his office here in Washington, D.C. is Skip Brandon. He's the founding partner of Smith & Brandon International, a former deputy assistant director in charge of counterterrorism for the FBI. He worked under the first President Bush and under President Clinton. And Mr. Brandon, thanks very much for joining us.
Surely.
I don't know how much of this report you've had a chance to get through, but could we get an initial reaction to it?
Well, my reaction is more to the comments that have been made, and I think my overall feeling is that I like what I'm hearing in terms of they're saying we need to learn from this, we need to move forward, we need to improve things. There doesn't seem to be an awful lot of emphasis, at least on the public statements, on trying to point fingers. I think it's important to point out, and I think we all know this, there's not one man or woman in the FBI, the CIA, NSA, the military, any of the agencies involved with this who wouldn't give anything to have been able to prevent this. There's no indication at all that anybody, that there were errors of omission, in a sense. I think that we have to say this was a failure. Anytime you have an act of terrorism, it's a failure. Let's learn from it.
And as we heard just before we cut away for our break from Porter Goss, the concern is obviously what to do to prevent the next terrorist attack, when and if it might happen. There are changes that have been made, obviously, since September the 11th, and there are those who have been quoted, at least in the newspapers, as saying the recommendations in that respect of this report are old news.
Well, they may be, but the recommendations have to be made. This is a part of the process. We're partway through it, and that's been made very clear. We may be still learning things 20 years from now, but we do have to learn for it. We do have to make recommendations, and both the Senate and the House need to say, what can we do? How can we make it better? It's very important also to point out that all of the agencies, and particularly I'm familiar with the FBI, obviously,
sure,
have operated under not only statutes and statutory limitations, statutory authority, but also under very strict guidelines. The guidelines and statutes on September 10th are different than they are today, and that's very important to note. People were restricted in some ways. They could not have initiated investigations then that they can now. So we have learned.
Yet, as we all saw in the aftermath of the disclosures of the Phoenix memo and then the subsequent the Moussaoui case in Minnesota and that sort of thing, there were opportunities that were definitely missed.
There were opportunities that now, with the value of hindsight, we absolutely see them. I guess what I would say, and I've been in the ring, it's a lot easier to put a puzzle together when you're on vacation, when you have a picture of the puzzle, than it is when you just have a bunch of pieces. And that's the thing that we have to remember. We do have to keep it in perspective. Having said that, all of us wish that somebody had paid more attention to the memo from Phoenix. But I might add, probably one of hundreds, if not thousands, of memos that came in over a year-long period, offering suggestions, ideas, etc. People make decisions. This was one I know people wish they hadn't made.
As we heard at the beginning, I believe it was from Senator Graham, he said, you know, in retrospect, had there been a central location where all of this material was processed, all of the intercept material electronically gathered, and all of the memos and that sort of thing, if there had been a central location, a central place to analyze this, they might have been able to put it together, might have, in retrospect, with luck. Is there such a place now?
Yeah, they do have the ability to do that now. They didn't have that before. Part of it was cultural, but I will also say, and I don't want to sound defensive, but we have to be realistic about it. Senator Graham said there should have been a central location. What you get down to are dollars. Dollars are allocated by senators and congressmen, and it gets down to a matter of budget. These ideas have been floated for many, many years, and the budget just wasn't there.
Mr. Brandon, the public also knows the exact budgets of the intelligence agencies aren't public, but it's known to be north of $30 billion a year. You'd think they might find a billion or so in there to help out with a center?
Absolutely. There is no question about that, but there has been an emphasis going back through many administrations, going clear back to President Carter, in my experience, on technical intelligence as opposed to human intelligence. I think we've learned a very, very sad lesson. There has to be a balance. The de-emphasis on the collection of human intelligence was something that hurt us very badly, and I hope we've learned that lesson.
Skip Brandon, thanks very much for being with us today. We appreciate it.
Surely.
Skip Brandon is the founding partner of Smith & Brandon International and a former deputy assistant director in charge of counterterrorism for the FBI. He worked under the first President Bush and under President Clinton. Mike Schuster, as we wrap up this conversation, and again, there will be much more coverage later today on All Things Considered from NPR News, and you can get more analysis later. Also, again, if you'd like to read this report for yourself, there's a link to it on our webpage, so just go to www.npr.org and you can take a look at the declassified report issued just a little under an hour ago by a joint House-Senate Intelligence Committee that investigated the intelligence failures leading up to 9/11. Where will this go from here, Mike? We did hear that some legislation might be introduced in Congress.
I'm sure that many members of Congress will be considering what kind of legislation they want to introduce. Obviously, as a result of the 9/11 attacks, the Department of Homeland Security has been established and has brought a number of agencies into a huge agency, and we don't know yet just how strong and efficient that agency is going to be. Neither Senator Shelby nor Senator Graham said specifically what kind of legislation they want to introduce. I think that this will be a great deal of food for thought. I think that despite what Skip Brandon said about not wanting to point figures, I think that fingers will be pointed. I think the FBI comes out of this report looking very poorly, and the Bush White House comes out of the report not looking all that well, and especially in its fight not to declassify a lot of the information and not to share information from the National Security Council, which was where all of these threats surfaced in 2001 and were discussed. So this could go in many, many different directions in the Congress and elsewhere. And I think that that the American public will be watching the Kane Commission as well to see whether they take it forward.
And again, the Kane Commission is a bipartisan commission that has been established and has just, just a couple of months ago, begun its process of investigations. As we heard earlier from Senator Graham, all of the material gathered in the process of the congressional investigation has been turned over to the Kane Commission. Its findings will be some time coming, very briefly, Mike, it's certainly going to put the pressure on them.
It will put the pressure on them. I believe Congresswoman Pelosi said that all of the information from the congressional inquiry, including that which was not declassified today, has been turned over to the Kane Commission. And that'll be an independent set of eyes who will look at it bipartisanly, we hope, mm-hmm. to see whether there should be more information released to the American public.
NPR's Mike Schuster with us from NPR West in Los Angeles. Thanks very much, Mike.
You're welcome, Neil.
Again, more coverage later today on NPR News of the findings in the report and today's news conference. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.